We are on a mission to empower busy women with the tools and skills they need to grow successful, profitable, and purposeful handmade creative business.
A business that they are excited to jump out of bed for every single morning.
A business that allows them to quit the day job and start living life how they want to live it.
Welcome to the Handmade Business Podcast with your hosts Anna Maria and Lindsay Warren.
Hi everyone, and welcome to this week's episode. Me and Anna are super excited this time as we've got a lovely guest to interview, and we're being joined by Chloe from Hepcat Hats. So I'm really excited. Chloe makes the most amazing hats, so you know you are definitely going to go and want to check out her Instagram page after this and see all the loveliness that she creates. So we're really excited to have you on as a guest, Chloe. So welcome.
Thank you. Very excited to be here. I do follow some of your podcasts and I've got some good advice from them. And it's useful when you're spewing out a few things on Instagram. Yeah. Tips and tricks. And so it's good for little businesses to have a look at that. It's very useful.
Oh, thanks, Chloe. That's really good to hear, isn't it, Anna?
Absolutely, yeah, thank you very much. That's great to know.
So we're looking really forward to finding out more about you and your lovely business, Chloe. So we'd love you just to start off by telling us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, where you live now, family and things like that. And have you always been crafty?
Yes, I've always been crafty. I live in West Yorkshire, in Guiseley. This was where I was brought up, just a couple of miles away in Otley, but I have moved about a lot. I've lived and worked in Australia and the States, London. I've done some work in Wales and Scotland as well, in the costume industry. I did start off just having a love of sewing at school and just doing it after school, and it just turned into something that I wanted to do. So I studied at university. I did costume set and props, what is known now as the Northern College of Art. So I went on from there to work in the field of costume, performance costume. My first job was actually at Butlins, which was fun.
Oh, I bet it was.
Yeah, to say the least. And I moved down to London to actually study at Kensington and Chelsea College doing theatrical millinery with an amazing lady called Jane Smith. So she has made some of the iconic hats that you would see in the films. She made Keira Knightley's hat, the fox hat from The Duchess. Yeah. She made hats from Harry Potter. So it was really amazing to learn from her. And from then on, I just went on to do freelancing costume and millinery. When I went on a working holiday to Australia, I walked into a hat shop and I came out with a job, and I was there for 2 years. But anyway, here I am. I do have a line of warm berets, and now is the time of year to be putting them on because it's getting chilly.
It definitely is. What an amazing story, Chloe.
Yeah, I've got to. Okay, so I have questions. I knew I was going to have questions.
I knew you would, Anna. You never disappoint.
So, first of all, whereabouts in the States did you live?
Oh, well, I went to do the Camp America for a couple of years. It was called Stage Door Manor. So the likes of like Natalie Portman and Robert Downey Jr. went there when they were young, and it was a theatre camp. And It was in the Catskills Mountains, in Upper New York State. I can't quite remember the name of the town, but it was a tiny little place. I think a few miles away was a hotel where Dirty Dancing was filmed. It was that sort of thing. So that was a cool experience.
Wow.
As well. Oh, amazing.
I always wanted to go to that camp on Dirty Dancing, didn't you?
It was really, really good. It was a very good experience. The kids were amazing there. Kids in the States, the drama kids. It was very Glee. It was a really good experience.
Amazing. So obviously you've mentioned there that you started off in the costume Were you designing as well as making, or were you just making after the design had been given to you?
So the costume industry is big. If you work in TV, it's different to working in film, it's different to working in theatre. Costume makers are different to costume designers, different to costume supervisors, different to coordinators. And actually, it's quite a big field. And when you go into it, when I went into it at the beginning, I was thinking, oh, I love making things. But what there was available were dressing jobs behind the scenes in theatres. And obviously, when I worked in Butlins, it was a bit of making. We dressed the performers. When you work in backstage wardrobe, it's very much fixing things and doing the laundry and changing the costumes over. So I did a fair bit of that. And I did a lot of work experience, and I worked for a Stephen Jones, the milliner, and a few costume makers. I also actually got a part-time job at the British Museum, working in the galleries, which actually led on to being a costume maker for a museum theatre company, which was based out of the London museums. And so it was very much working freelance and doing bits and bobs and trying to focus on something. And I did like doing little bits and pieces. So yes, I was a maker and I was a dresser. I also just did some sort of supervising work as well on some productions and a lot of voluntary work. And you eventually do that and get your name out there and get known as a person, and jobs sort of crop up and you get the occasional phone call to do, I don't know, well, Peaky Blinders for a week or something.
As you do.
As you do.
When you're about to get on a plane and go on holiday, you have to refuse the job. But it was very much a lot of that. I did that for 4 years before doing my working holiday in Australia. So I did lots of bits and pieces, but primarily the making is what I love to do and what I still like doing.
So obviously then you have transitioned into making berets, hats. So how did that kind of pivot? How did that, or not pivot, but well, kind of, yes, a pivot. How did it go from doing it for somebody else become doing it for you?
I think that if you have a commission, you have a certain amount of say in the design and the interpretation, but ultimately it's up to that person, you know, or the director or the client to say what they want, and you're still doing what someone else wants to do, so you don't have the total freedom. Whereas producing things myself means I can make some beautiful products and people will like them and buy them. I think as a person who likes making things, you just want to make things and you just want to be able to design yourself. I actually at the moment, since I have my daughter, I work part-time in an office job, and it's my creative outlet. I didn't really want to do things by commission. I wanted to have a range of products and to be able to sell them and exhibit at fairs and things like that, and to just say, hey, this is me, this is what I do, and it's my design and it's my idea.
What made you actually want to start a business? So you've sort of mentioned, Chloe, that you wanted to, you know, have that creative outlet. But, you know, was that the main reason for starting your business?
I'd say probably, yeah. I mean, I was, I got hold of a couple of berets. I had a blue one and a black one. And then I thought, well, you know, I probably should have a red one to go with that red coat. And then, you know how it goes. And then I thought, you know, berets are such a classic hat, and I just love them. I was wearing them all the time. I always have. But they're quite plain, and I just thought, I'm going to spice one up a bit, you know. So I just did a load of beading on one, and wherever I wore it, I got comments and people were saying, oh, that's amazing, you know, I've not seen that before. And I thought, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this because people like it. And it just became something I wanted to do. I mean, outside of work, I can relax, I can do things that I like to do, I can be creative. I have definitely, it's been a big learning curve having to do everything outside of just stitching on these hats, because as you know, business isn't as simple as that when you're in creative business. But really, it's just the love of doing it. And if you do for financial purposes have to have an office job, a part-time job, or bread and butter money, then it's good to do something outside of that that you really enjoy and is your passion.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, wouldn't you, Anna?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, for sure. What would you say has been your biggest sort of business struggle though so far? I mean, obviously there's loads of great things, but there's always going to be something that's made you question or made you have to go in search of an outside answer. So what would you say has been the biggest struggle for you in business?
I think it would be reaching out to customers. I think there's a lot of creative people, and I know a lot of creative people who love doing what they do, and they just make and make and make, and they've got excess things, and then they say, oh, I'll sell these, and they maybe go to a local market or they set up an Etsy store, and then they don't quite know what to do from then on. And I think with me, I focus on Instagram, and I try to build followers on Instagram. Any more than that, it's a bit too much for me to do, you know, to have multiple sites going, or maybe even going to fairs in real life, as we're saying now. It's reaching out to customers that is quite difficult when you're creative and you like being at home on your own and doing those things. It's a different skill entirely. So for me, I'm learning hashtags, SEO, all those sorts of things, how to reach out to people, what the target audience actually is, and whether or not I should do more in-person fairs, and really getting people interested. And that, from a sales and marketing perspective, I've not been trained in that. I can make hats. So that's where the struggle is for me. And I think it's very similar for people in creative businesses.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think it's so easy to be creative and to make the things we love, but when it comes to running a business, that's a whole new skill set we have to learn. And I think when we start out, we don't always realise that.
Yeah, so when I started working in London, it was very much networking, which is fine. You can sit down with one person. They might be a designer in telly or something like that. They've got your card. You know, you can communicate with this person. They know your skills. They could possibly phone you up for however many jobs in the future. And that's fine. And through that network, especially if you know a mutual person, then you're in the game, you know, you're in that little clique. Whereas when you're trying to reach out to so many people, it's a different skill. It's a different mindset. And some people find it really hard to sell their product. I can sell me and I can sell my skills, but trying to think up buzzwords and hashtags and things like that can be difficult, but I think I'm getting there. I'm definitely learning it through Instagram. Yeah, spending a lot of time on Instagram.
Well, that's good to hear, Chloe. So we'd love to know what has helped you most in your business, do you think, so far?
Advice from other people, getting lots of different perspectives. And support, people saying, you know, your hats are great, you know, you've really got good photography going there. Whereas really, I mean, starting this in lockdown, I didn't have anyone to take photos. I wanted to gain some traction on Instagram, but, you know, I only had me. So it was trying to do, you know, trying to do some effective selfies and thinking, oh, they're not great, you know. But actually, people really like them. So it buoyed me up to continue to do that. And, you know, I'm not bad looking, so the photos are all right.
Yeah, I must admit, I love your photos because you really, for me, you create a real mood and atmosphere with them. They look absolutely amazing and they really do kind of set the scene for your hat. So do you agree, Anna?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the word I would have used is you set a mood with your photos. Like, it's each individual photograph. I actually was privileged to see the Pink Beret in real life a few weeks ago.
I'm jealous.
And just the photos and the way in which the backdrop and the lighting and everything that you do, it really does set the right mood for each individual hat, because I believe from where I'm standing, they each have their own personality, and so they all require, one size doesn't fit all for photography for the hat. It doesn't, because they all are individual and they've all got their own little personal touches. So, and obviously we're all making products and we've all got different products, but we can kind of, Lindsay and I can probably fit into a one size fits all and have, but with you, Chloe, yeah, the way you capture each individual hat is amazing. And I've just got to ask, because it's just popped into my head. So I know the answer because I Googled it, but I'm going to ask you to explain Hepcat hats. So Hepcat, where does that come from?
So a Hepcat is, I guess, a cool person back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, think jazz player, think saxophone, you know, he's a cool cat. So that has come from the word Hepcat. And yeah, it's very much around jazz and music. And I just wanted these hats to be vintage inspired, and I was looking at motifs and art deco motifs, and it just fits. It just seemed to be right. It just seemed to have that sort of feel about it, that name, and it's a unique name.
It is a unique name, and I think that again, it's like its personality, isn't it? Even the name itself is screaming personality, uniqueness, coolness, you know, standing out from the crowd. And that's exactly what your berets do, but also what I wanted to catch on to and just to give you praise for, because it is so difficult, is how your photographs and you in the photographs capture that essence. So it's like your brand, your personality. Yeah, it's all encompassing and you can see that on your feed. Like, it's gorgeous. It's just perfect. It's exactly how it should be. And even just like the photograph that you sent over for us to use when this episode goes live, where you're holding that cup, the blue cup, which I know you spoke about recently on your story. So it's like everything about you, you're just encompassing that whole era, that whole style. So it's great. I love it.
Yeah, that's good to know. That's what I'm going for. But again, it's been a learning curve. And especially when it comes to branding, you do see companies out there with their social media branding, and you know, they look amazing, and it can make you feel, oh, you know, is my branding a bit second rate? But really, it's getting there, and it is a learning curve. And yeah, it's good to know that there is a vibe going on there. So I think it's working now. There's still some way to go, isn't there? There always is.
Oh, there always is. We're all a work in progress, just as humans and in business. We are a work in progress. That is fine. So then the next question I wanted to ask you is, what's been kind of that the highest point, the best thing, the moment that you're just like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, I can hold that in a little jar and that's amazing.
Well, I got all the hats out a couple of weeks ago from the big box, and I just looked at them and I loved them. I just think they're amazing. That was when I'm setting up to go to the Festival of Vintage Fair at the beginning of December, and I got them all out and I thought, well, I'll do a little practice stall. And I just thought, wow, I'm good. You know, these look great. And they really are beautiful. And you can't even see that from the photos. You need to see them in real life. And I don't know, it's just I just had a moment where I just thought, yeah, these are really good. People do like them. I've got to take them out there and show them to people. Because, yeah, the photos are good, but they don't really do these hats justice. They're so sparkly and shiny with their crystals and everything. That was just a moment that I just thought I'm enjoying doing this.
That's lovely to hear, isn't it, Anna?
And I just think that because we haven't really kind of pushed you down a direction to answer this, but could you just tell us all a little bit about the berets themselves? Because obviously they're not just berets, they are vintage berets. Can you just tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, so the actual berets, I mean, you can't really make the woolen berets. They have to be mass-produced, but I do get them from a supplier, which, in my opinion, is the highest quality berets in Europe. They are 100% wool, but they're not just the 100% wool that you might buy from Accessorize. They're a really thick quality. They're really exceptional quality. When you go out without a hat, you actually lose 30% of the heat from your body through your head. So if you are going out in winter, wear one of these. They really are very, very warm. So the hats are embellished with either my own design or with antique beading or embroidery. So when I do design my own features, I'll look at the deco motifs and anything that inspires me, like a sunburst motif. Or where the house I grew up in had stained glass windows, and I've used that design on one of the hats. I use crystals, Swarovski pearls and things like that, sequins, to embroider up the shapes. And a lot of it is creative, so I have an idea, I have a shape, and then I just go with it. Some of the beads I use for that are vintage beads. So maybe jet or bohemian grass, a French jet it's called. I've managed to get hold of quite a lot of vintage Swarovski crystals, and they might be, you know, 60, 70 years old, but they truly are still vibrant and able to be used again. And we're all trying to get that element of sustainability into our businesses, aren't we? So I did get hold of some amazing vintage embroidery pieces. I still can't quite work out what they were, but what it looks like is if you'd imagine a flapper dress, the waistline was at about the hips, so it was a dropped hip. Waistline it's called, and you would often get these embroidery pieces that would go on and off dresses with these tassels attached. I've got hold of a few of them, and I managed to repair and restore them and add them onto the hats, and they are true pieces that, you know, who's going to do anything with these? So, you know, I'm managing to use those again, and yeah, I just keep finding these little gems of embroidery pieces, and some of them are really tatty and really falling apart. And so they're now what I want to go for. I want to add those onto the hats, and it's really unusual embroidery or beads that you don't find anymore. So it really is a unique product that you'll get. Now, these pieces of embroidery could just get thrown away. They've been in boxes for years and years. So if I'm not going to rejuvenate them with the skills from, you know, my days in the costume workrooms and things, I don't think people are, you know. So it's, I just don't like seeing these amazing pieces being thrown away. So that's what they are. They go onto the hats. I do make sure that they're structured and stable. So I'll mount them onto another net, and then they'll go onto the hat with an invisible stitch, with invisible thread. So it's not an easy task when you're there stitching black invisible thread onto a black beret with black beads. But yes, they're a high quality product with high quality materials, and I do think they look really unique. And they're very eye catching. Whenever I have one which I do wear, you've probably seen me, Anna, with it. And every time I wear it, I get people talking about it. It is a talking point. And it really, really is a unique thing to wear.
Well, you've just made them sound even more special than what I thought they were before now, Chloe. You really have. The thought of just all those like special treasures that you've just saved and made into something new and beautiful on your hats. It's just so exciting. So I'm sure everyone will be absolutely willing to look at your Instagram page after they'll have, you know, listened to this episode. So it's been great sort of hearing about your journey so far. So I'd love to know, what are your goals for the future for your business?
So I mentioned that I'll be having a store at the Festival of Vintage. That's at the beginning of December. That's in York Racecourse. Or I think they're calling it a vintage Christmas. So yeah,
that sounds a brilliant fit for your hats.
Oh, sounds, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if I'll be on the store much, because there's the vintage cars and there'll be swing dancing and all of these things, and some other stores as well selling vintage things. So it really... yeah, it really will be a festival. Everybody there will be, you know, in their true vintage garb.
That sounds amazing.
Great time. Yeah. So that is going to be my first in-person stall, as it were. I wasn't really intending to go out and do fairs, because I think it can be hit and miss. Recently, I have gone around the local craft fairs or designer fairs and thought about whether my product is right for them. But I really think that the vintage fair is going to be good. So after that, I will decide whether there's any larger events I can take my hats down to. There's things like London Accessory Week, where, I mean, it's very much for designers to exhibit their products, and buyers from luxury boutiques will come and take a look, and we'll be taking them, you know, buying them as possibly at wholesale price. So that's the thing to think about for the future. But I do like that I have control right now over my working hours. And, you know, when I feel like making a hat or going out to an antique fair and buying stuff, I'll do that. I'm obviously keeping content going on Instagram to gain that traction, but I do have that control. So I didn't really want to be stocking the hats in local shops and really feeling the pressure to produce things. So it's all going my pace, really. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of scope to reach out in different directions, but also I do need to focus and make sure it doesn't get too much for me. Because I think it's really important to recognise the limitations, and it's growing organically, and we'll take a step one way, and if it's a positive step, we'll go down that pathway, which is something I've learned from working in the costume industry a while back. Because when you try to do too many things, you lose a focus, and people really appreciate that you specialise in something. So yeah, we'll see how that fair goes and see if there's any fairs or events that I can go to in real life. Later on, yeah.
What date is that fair?
It's the 4th and 5th of December.
That's right, okay.
York-based course, 8:30 to 4:30.
Well, I know that we have local listeners to us, as in Chloe and I. Yeah. So if anybody is available, then there you go. You can head on over to York. That sounds amazing. So, yeah, I'll have to. I know I can't do the 4th, but I think I can do the 5th. So are you there both days?
Yes.
Ha, wonderful. Right. OK, I will check out the calendar for that one. So we're kind of nearing the end of the questions, but if we could just ask you a couple more, what have you found to be the most surprising thing about running your own business?
For this, the Hepcat Hats range, I'm really finding that running a business, I haven't really done it in this way before. You need a multifaceted approach. Would you say that you need to have, excuse the pun, but you need to have lots of hats on. You need to have your creative hat on. You need to have your networking hat on. You need to have your branding hat on. You need all these hats on. You need to learn a lot of skills. It will come. It's fine. I mean, if you're thinking of starting something new, you'll need to gain all of these skills. I think that's the thing. When I did start making the berets, and I thought, right, I'm going to sell these. It's not as simple as that. It really isn't. And it is a completely different skill set. So if I know that you do advise a lot of people who are starting businesses, and people probably get to a stage where they feel overwhelmed. I know I have. But it's better, I suppose, to start from one point and slowly grow organically, and you'll build up those skills eventually. But now when I look back, I think, well, I logged on Instagram and I posted some photo and it's all grown from there, but I hadn't used Instagram at all. Maybe I should have set up my own account, looked at how it works, looked at how Instagram shopping works, and maybe done a bit more research. But you know, we've those days are done now, and I've moved on. But yeah, really building up those skills is probably the surprising thing. And now looking back, thinking, wow, I've gained all of those skills and I've done it myself. So yeah, probably a little bit overwhelming at the start. But you can look back and you say, okay, I'm achieving something. I've achieved something. Let's go on and do greater things now.
Well, that sounds really great, Chloe. I think as well, sometimes we can look back and think, oh, we should have done this differently or that differently. But sometimes done is just better than perfect. And sometimes you just have to dip your toe in the water and see how it goes. And sometimes we take too long in that doing the research phase. I think sometimes we end up just not starting at all. And it can really hold us back. So, you know, credit for you that you just went with it when you hadn't used Instagram before. So I'd love you just to finish off today by, you know, sharing a top tip with other handmade business owners. Obviously, you know, it's a journey when you have a business. So I'd love you to sort of share what your top tip is.
My top tip would be to believe in yourself. If you feel you have a skill and you have something to offer, then you do. If you make amazing products, someone will buy them, people will appreciate them, and just keep on believing in yourself. You'll hit a point where you won't want to do it anymore, but it's fine, forget about it, and tomorrow is a new day. And with other people's support, you know, it really does help when people say, oh, you know, you make such amazing hats, and I'm like, oh yeah I do, you know. And it spurs you on. But maybe sometimes you do need people to say that to you. But if you are producing wonderful things, you've got to believe in it. I just see you've got a thing behind you that says believe in the magic.
Yeah,
maybe that's it. You've got your own magic, believe in it. But you know, with an idea, when you've got some idea brewing, there is something there. There is always something there that you can make out of it. And just believe in yourself and go with it.
Well, I think that's absolutely great advice. Wouldn't you agree, Anna?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really nice way to finish off as well. So if you could, Chloe, could you tell us where people can go and find more about you and Hepcat Hats?
If you go to Instagram, the hashtag is Hepcat Hats. And I have a guide there. You have the posts and the reels, and then you can click on the guide that will show you all the hats that are for sale. You can have a look through all of the posts to actually see my making process, and I also share some tips and in terms of the embroidery that I'm finding, the antique embroidery, you can find out more about that. You can also email me hello@hepcathats.co.uk. You can email me or DM me through Instagram if you do want to make a purchase. At the moment, I don't have an Etsy shop, but I do have one set up. If you were to want to purchase something from me, you can. I'll set up a custom Etsy listing so that you know you can buy safely. But it's mostly all on Instagram, and it is a great place to find inspiration anyway. Head on over and have a look.
Thank you so much, Chloe, for joining us today. It was really lovely to learn more about you and to hear more about your business.
Thank you. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks so much. So thanks so much to everyone for listening today. We'd love it if you could visit us either on iTunes, Spotify or Stitcher and leave a review, because the reviews really do help us get seen. And, we want to help as many people as possible to have a successful handmade business. So we'd love it if you could just leave those reviews and really help us get seen and help more people. So thanks so much to Chloe. And thanks, Anna. It's been another great episode. So thanks so much for joining us, everyone.